Hello, Jonathan.
What's up, Katie?
Welcome to Arts Underground.
Such a cool name. It's a cool name.
You have a cool name, Jonathan Silver.
Thank you. I do like my name.
Yes.
I do.
And you are one of the most hardworking comedians I've ever met.
People keep saying that. I appreciate the compliment. I really do.
Why don't you take it?
You know, you do work because you like it, and then you don't want to feel like a fraud, so you just do it. But then people see how hard you work, and then they see the product, and then you're like, okay, they are kind of right. So I really do appreciate it. I appreciate you noticing because I try very hard to make everyone have a good experience and to laugh. I want you laughing.
Every single show I've seen you perform at, you make everyone feel so good. Oh. Like I can just see it in their faces.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I try to look out and I want to make sure they're not like crying. You know what I mean? Like that would be.
I mean, if they're crying from laughter,
laughter is good, right? But I don't want you to be reminded of like your childhood trauma. Unless you thought that was funny, which is, I mean, I guess.
You know. I mean, we all have different coping mechanisms.
We do. Yeah, I like to laugh through. I like to laugh through that kind of stuff. I do.
Yeah.
I don't mean to offend. I just, you know, I like that stuff.
So I'm not going to ask you about your childhood trauma.
No, you can totally ask me about childhood trauma. Yes.
If you would like to.
Yes. Let's trauma dump on each other. No comedy. We're only going to talk about sad things.
No sad. Okay, so.
What you got? Let me sing again. Intro. Intro again. What is a mid-intro called? A mid-tro.
Mid-tro. Jonathan Silver.
I'm here.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Huntsville. I'm from, you know, I tell people I'm from Huntsville, and then I tell them where I went to school, and they say, oh, you from Madison. And I'm like, okay. I've gotten that several times. So it's just like, oh, no, you Madison. Scott used to be like, oh, you Madison. Oh, you Madison people. And I'm like, okay, yes. I went to high school in Madison. Right. I am from Huntsville. I was not born here, but I have lived here the longest time. Mm-hmm. So I'm from Alabama. I was born in Kentucky. I've lived in Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama.
Connect the dots. How did you go from Kentucky to Mississippi to Alabama? Like, where along the way did you get interested in comedy?
I wanted to be a comedian since I was 14. Mm-hmm. There were two comedians that I influenced me very early on. The first one was obviously Dave Chappelle. You know, Dave Chappelle is one of the greatest comedians, if not the greatest comedians of all time. You know, recently his style of comedy is, I would say, probably gone a little far as what he's saying. I do still consider him a great. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff I do think he sounds kind of like the old guy in the room, and I wish he would broaden his perspective.
As a comedian, from your perspective, is it possible to put aside what people's material is versus, you know, their personal beliefs?
Do you hear this? Like,
even though those are sort of like one and the same sometimes, right?
Yeah, they really are. You know, there's a lot of folks that we like that are super controversial. You know, R. Kelly, Kanye West. You know, these people. That, you know, Bill Cosby too. Just these people that just have do and say awful things, but we love their art.
Like I grew up with Bill Cosby.
Exactly,
so
right. We're like,
that.
Oh my God, Bill Cosby. You know, the Cosby Show. You know, every great Cosby movie. You know, Ghost Dad. You know, oh my God, love Ghost Dad.
Great.
Oh, well, no, because it's not a good movie. It's just my favorite movie. I just love the movie.
Gotcha.
Dave Chappelle, number one. And so I try to love his old work and critique his new work. And then the other comedian that I loved, I was scrolling through HBO. Remember HBO used to air like comedy specials on TV? And so I'm scrolling through and I find Dane Cook. He was just so physical and just so... I thought he was pretty witty.
I will say I was a big Dane Cook fan back in the day.
I loved Dane Cook.
As a kid.
Every single special I loved, and he was selling out the Garden, and it was just, I kind of caught him at that height. And I was like, man, Dave Chappelle and Dane Cook, those were my two. And so, yeah, that's where it started. It started at 14. But, you know, here in Huntsville, our comedy club did not open until like 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
So we really, and the scene starts in maybe 2011, 2012. You know, I'm in college, so I don't even know it really exists for real. And so...
Where was your first gig?
First gig was... Okay, so me and my boy Sci-Fi...
Or first open mic even.
Right. So me and Sci-Fi,
So another awesome local comedian.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Have him on if you can. Yeah. You definitely want to get pin down Sci-Fi. So I had told Sci-Fi, hey, I want to do comedy, but I want to do it with you because you're hilarious too. Let's do it together. You just tell me when you're ready. And he said, okay. 5 years go by. Mm-hmm. And all that time, I'm writing jokes. And he hits me up out of the blue. It's like, we're going to an open mic. So we go to Salty Nut Brewery, which is now closed. Oh, rest in peace. But Scott's running the mic there. Brent Reed is there. And I see Alex DiMascola there, who's another awesome comedian. Mm-hmm. And I see him go up, and I'm like, if I can just be a third of the funny of this guy, I'll be fine. And so we just watched that night. Then we went to what was Madison Station, which is now Boxcar. We went to Boxcar, and that's Matthew Tate's mic. He says, I put our names on a list. I was like, whoa, hold on. I'm not ready. He's like, get ready.
He threw your hat in the ring.
He put my name first, too. He was like, all right, you're going to go first. So if you suck, then I'll just make fun of you for the next 10 minutes. And so I pulled out all my jokes, and I just picked the first. I had like 100 jokes written.
Oh, wow.
And so I just picked the first like 15, and then I just said them all, and people laughed. And I was like, oh, okay.
So you come prepared.
I come prepared. Yeah. Pretty much every gig I have a set list already prepared.
How do you craft that? Like, did you read any books or listen to any podcasts?
No, I didn't.
Just kind of study the people you love?
Yeah, I study the people I love. When I first started, I was 100% trying to emulate Roy Wood Jr.
Oh, I don't know.
Oh my God. He just had a benefit 2 weeks ago, and I saw his tickets. I was like, oh, that's not going to benefit me. not those ticket prices. Boy, he had $3,000 seats for sitting up front. I was like, oh my God. And it was for the Democrats, too. So I was like, I feel like I have to go.
That's several car payments.
Oh my God.
It would hurt my heart.
Yo, seriously. Like, it's like a whole 6 months of my car payments. Like, I just couldn't do it. That's like 4 months of rent. So I was just like, do I want to be homeless? Do I want to see Roy Wood Jr.? So I just was like, I'll just stay home. So, but yeah, I was 100% trying to emulate Roy Wood Jr. because I love Roy Wood Jr. And this other guy named Dion Cole. If you've seen Black-ish, he is Anthony Anderson's friend at his marketing career job. He's like the crazy one who says crazy stuff.
Yeah.
So I love Dion Cole. So those two were directly influencing me in the beginning. I wouldn't say my joke writing is emulated after them, but certainly my style and what I say and how I say it is definitely really close to them.
Have you developed like a rhythm?
Yeah, my personal style began to emerge probably about 2 years in.
Okay.
And so I say things my way, and then I just plug in what I want to say. So, you know, I'm still tweaking the formula, trying to figure out, you know.
And you also incorporate a lot of crowd work.
Yeah, I would call it more crowd participation. But what you are right is that, you know, I have the crowd work ready for the crowd. Yeah. It isn't like, oh, what do you do? Now, listen, this is not me, you know, pooping on any crowd work comedians, okay? You know, we love the Matt Rifes.
Yeah.
We love the Nate Jones. Oh, yeah, that's okay. You know, you're right. That's a terrible example.
No, he's coming to the Orion.
He's opening for Chappelle, too, actually. Chappelle's got him as his opener.
Okay.
So, you know, I understand the need and the desire and the fun of crowd work. You know, Nate Jackson does crowd work amazingly. But for me, I need something a little more controlled, personally. I don't really thrive in that level of chaos. Now, do I have something to say when someone is heckling? Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you're a comedian, you just know. But to start off a set that way, no, absolutely not. And this is just my personal style. This is not a knock to anybody else. But I have things to say. You know,
yeah.
I have jokes to tell, and I think you're going to like them. And so, you know, crowd work relies very heavily on what the audience gives you. What if the audience is quiet the whole time, and they don't want
to
talk?
Too afraid to talk. Yeah.
There have been so many times where I'm like, yo, come on, give me something. And they're too afraid to talk. And I'm just like, you have to be the energy that they want to respond to.
Right.
So you got to set that up. So
You do a really good job of getting them on your side, like kind of meeting them where they are.
Yes.
Their energy.
Absolutely.
If they're sort of, because there was a show that just happened. It was a Family Feud sort of style
so
show.
So much fun.
Oh,
listen,
yeah.
If y'all not coming to Shenanigans, y'all missing out. Y'all got to come to Shenanigans.
I'm going to ask you about Shenanigans a little later.
Yes,
but,
please.
But yeah, with the crowd participation, you're really good at meeting them where they are. Can you talk a little bit about your experience developing that?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So in my experience, you know, people do not generally want to talk at a comedy show.
Yeah.
There are a few people, I call them 10%, the 10%ers who are like, I'm going to go to the comedy show and I'm going to be part of the show. You know, I think those people have to be dealt with as they come. That's really on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. It's not so often, though.
It's not that often. Yeah. People don't really... Now, I will say this, and this might be a little controversial, but if you bombing, they gonna talk.
Yeah.
That's really when things start to go left, is if you are bombing, they're gonna be like, you suck, you know, tell a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
You kind of gotta eat crow when that happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then, okay, maybe you talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come prepared, you should be okay. You should be mostly all right. And so I did want to kind of figure out, how do I incorporate the crowd where they are responding, but they're only responding in a way that I need them to for the joke itself?
Yeah.
That's why I write the tongue twisters. That's why I have...
And they change every so often. Yeah.
I've got several written, and so...
Can you give us one?
They got to come to a show to see that one. They got to come to a show.
You got to pay to hear that.
That's fair. Yeah. You got to come to a show to hear the openers. But they're really good. Pulls you in very quickly, and it lets you know if the show's going to go good or not. That's what I can tell you. And Katie knows. She was in the audience. If those tongue twisters don't go good, it's going to go real bad.
See different audiences respond differently.
You remember the lady that booed?
She was in the front row.
And she's booing. And I'm like, nope, it's not going to be a good show.
Go to a show to find out what he's talking about.
Yeah, just come to a show. Come out to Shenanigans if I'm ever hosting. Or come out to, if you're in an apartment complex and you want me to come out, I will. And then you'll see.
That's a great segue into my next question.
Look at me. Mind reading you.
Look at this. Okay, Jonathan Silver, you have hosted a comedy show in a brewery. You've hosted a comedy show in an apartment complex, as you just said. You've also hosted a comedy show in a certain adult romantic boutique.
That's correct.
Yes?
Kay's being nice. I run an open mic in a sex shop. That's what I do. She's being nice.
Call it what it is.
Deck of Pleasures on University.
Yeah.
We have an open mic every Tuesday, and we go back there, and we tell jokes every Tuesday.
So talk about sort of having to acclimate to your surroundings when it's not a conventional stage.
Yeah, that's a wonderful question.
And how do you set those up?
Okay, so that's the easy question. So I literally just canvass the city.
Right.
I will start on one end of university and just drive.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, okay, what about here? What about here? Now, picking a venue is extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the venue. You got to start with who wants comedy here.
Right.
Because what you hate is being somewhere no one wants to hear comedy. You know, shenanigans.
And you get ignored.
It's the worst. So many bars.
Mm.
If the bar wants comedy, the bar will set it up for comedy.
Yeah.
If the bar don't want comedy, you walk into a crapshoot. So you really are looking for places that want comedy. So you got to think, where's somewhere not necessarily out of the way, but where can we thrive?
Yeah.
Where can we be loud and obnoxious and tell silly jokes to where we're not bothering the people who weren't there to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And Pleasures had a back room. And so I went in there. I produced another show, secret shows around here called Don't Tell Comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was looking for a don't tell. And I was like, ooh, Pleasures. And then after the show went so well, I was like, we could do a show back here. And mm-hmm. so that's how that venue came about. But I just canvassed the city looking for who wants comedy? Who wants it? Do you want it? I'm like, Oprah, you get comedy. You get comedy. But only people who want it.
But you don't have to pay the extra weird taxes.
Right, no extra weird taxes. Yeah. No extra weird taxes on the car that you thought she gave you. That's messed up. So no, it's got to start with who wants comedy.
Yeah.
And then when you adapt to your surroundings, and that kind of goes into it because you're like, okay, they want comedy here.
Mm-hmm.
Great. When you get up as host, you say, hey, this is an open mic versus this is a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
This is for you to hear jokes versus this for you to hear new jokes. Setting expectations as a host, really, really important.
Yeah.
Saying to the audience, this is what we expect of you. You know, sometimes you can say, hey, don't heckle or whatever. But if you book strong comedians, they'll be laughing instead of heckling.
Mm-hmm.
And so... You know, you just try to be interesting enough that they don't want to talk.
Because
some comedians, they're boring. And so I'm like, listen, you have to kind of step outside yourself a little bit.
Who did you learn all that from, the booking side of things?
That, so I didn't learn it from anyone.
Oh, you just
no, I gung-ho. Just.
Gung-ho.
Yeah,
cool.
I kind of just, I just started putting on shows.
That's really punk rock because just, carving a place for yourself in Huntsville, that's like
hard to do. I would agree. It's hard to do, but you know, I am a self-starter in that way, but I was tired of Sci-Fi, Alex Z, Alex DiMascola, Ogre. This is gonna sound weird, but I was tired of people not hearing them.
Yeah,
I was like, these guys are so funny.
Mm-hmm.
People need to hear them. How do I create a space where people can hear them?
Right.
Okay. Do you want comedy? Hey, I have comedian friends.
Yeah.
Can we come do a show for you? Yes. Okay, great. We'll come do a show for you. So it really was just born out of this. People need to hear us. We're funny. And it's worked out.
So on the flip side of that, what do spaces like Shenanigans mean to you?
Oh, my God.
What are they to you?
Oh, my God. Shenanigans means everything.
Right.
Everything to me. Because it was a space that, A, it already existed. B, there's no barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to go to, you want to do some shows at Shenanigans. You come out enough. We see your stuff. You can get on shows. In fact, you can get on shows at Shenanigans without any experience.
Yeah.
Because if you can spell and you're kind of sort of funny, come do the Dirty Spelling Bee.
Or Improv Thunderdome.
Or Improv Thunderdome. If you are quick on your feet, come do Improv Thunderdome.
Mm-hmm.
If you like bingo, come play Pervy Bingo. Like, it's just so accessible. And and that's Kim's motto. Kim and Jessica, the wonderful owners, Kimberly Wilson and Jessica Cotton, the wonderful owners, or I say founders of Shenanigans, because it's a nonprofit. They want the arts to be accessible, and they've made being funny so accessible. So I just walked in and I was just like, oh, hey, this is a great place. And they've evolved. They've added the podcast studio. They've added the Black Box Theater. And Shenanigans means everything to me. I mean, it's literally, I call it the greatest indie comedy theater on the planet.
Yeah,
that's what
and
I
it's
call
gaining in popularity.
Yeah. And just all of well all deserved. Of us working together make more audience and more people come. It's a beautiful cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Shenanigans means everything.
And
to me.
You just got to do a social media workshop.
That's
How
right.
Did that
yes.
Go?
Oh, it went great.
Yeah,
had some
yeah.
students. Had some students.
You gonna have it again?
I will have it again. Yeah,
okay.
Somebody needs to message me and be like, "Hey, I want it again." It was kind of like it wasn't a one off, but the first time I did a social media class, it was a spectacular failure. No one came, not a single person. I was there by myself for an hour, just waiting on students.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody came.
Mm-hmm.
But this one went a little bit better
through
Shenanigans, which is good. But yeah, so if you want to learn how to do social media stuff, the class is available through Shenanigans. And they have other classes. They have improv class. They have sketch comedy class. They have stand-up class. I mean, it's just, it's heaven.
Mm-hmm.
It's heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Shenanigans is heaven. Like, when you die, you're going to Shenanigans.
You'll at the pearly gates, you
at
see
the
Jessica
pearly,
and Kim.
It's going to be Kim and Jessica at the pearly gates. That's the real St. Peter and St. Michael. It's Kim and Jessica. And they're going to be like, come on in, guys. It's going to be great. There's going to be popcorn.
All-inclusive heaven.
All-inclusive.
Yes.
Listen, that's the heaven I want.
Mm-hmm.
I want an all-inclusive heaven.
Yeah.
I don't want a heaven where can't nobody be there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not cool at all. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to all-inclusive heaven for sure.
Now talk about, in the same vein of the class you just had.
Yeah.
Talk about the importance of social media, like building your presence as a comedian.
Listen.
As a
listen,
local comedian,
listen,
trying to get a following.
Listen, comics, if you're listening, would-be comics, if you're listening, post your content online. Anything and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make content. We do not live in a day where you could just sit in the back of the club, soak it all in, go up one time, kill, some guy hears you. And then he puts you on.
That's fantasy now.
That is a fantasy.
Yeah.
We don't. That might not even have been real
back then.
That just might have been a romanticization of the past.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist.
That's in movies. Yeah,
that's somebody's fantasy movie. No, that's not how it works. You have to make content.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding your funny, I talk in the class about finding your funny. What are you funny at? What is funny when you say it? You know, certain words are funny. The word rubber chicken is kind of funny. It brings to
he
mind.
He is holding a funny,
I'm
you should ask
holding
rubber chicken.
The rubber chicken.
It's official.
I am stroking the back gently.
the bumped, raised bumps.
Certain sounds are funny. You know, you just, it's, find your funny. And so if you tell a joke and nobody hears it, you didn't tell a joke.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't tell a joke. So find someone to hear the joke. Mm-hmm. Post it online. And I do like funny videos.
Yeah.
So I do like, you know, stuff that isn't really like stand-up. But I post my stand-up clips too.
Mm-hmm.
Got to post your content online. You gotta have something.
Mm-hmm.
Something. And the TikTok algorithm and the Instagram algorithm, they must be fed. They are
mm-hmm.
hungry dogs. And you got to feed them. So if you're thinking seriously of doing comedy, think seriously about making content as well.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're doing talking head stuff where you're just talking to the camera, you're sitting in your car, or you're doing skits where you're playing with multiple people. Or maybe you have a group of friends that you like, oh, we're all kind of funny together. Let's do a skit or let's make a podcast, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You got to
yeah.
have content.
Now, how do you find a balance between your comedy life and your personal life? How do you set those aside?
That's a tough one because...
Or is that just ingrained in you?
Well, I've always been pretty good at balancing.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been pretty good at saying, okay, this amount of time needs to be allotted for this.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to answer personally, I would say preparation is the best. You know, preparation is the best way to kind of figure out how to balance. Because if you're prepared, then you know how much time it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you set aside time to plan, and it could just be like, okay, this mic is going to take X amount of time. I'm going to be on stage for 5 minutes, but the line is going to be here, and I got to get here early. Like, perfect example, I would get to mics. If the sign up is at 8, I'm getting there at 7.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's starting at 7, I got to make sure kids are in bed or at least, you know, taken care of by 6, you know. Just planning, you got. That's what I do. You're just having
yeah.
a plan. But some people, you know, they just buy the seat of their pants.
Yeah.
And you just, I'm like, okay, whatever, dude. But I can't live my life like that.
And you when you're writing your material, like some of your jokes include, you know, talking about your wife, your kid.
Oh yeah.
Like how does that conversation go?
All my jokes by my wife.
Yeah.
Every single joke, and if she don't like it, I don't tell it.
That's a good one.
It's just easy. It's like mm-hmm. why it's just. She don't like it.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
don't like this. There's at least something bad about it.
Mm-hmm.
She don't like it, and so she don't like it. My son loves it. He's in my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
He loves it. He loves it so much. He's only 7.
Mm-hmm.
He understands that people are laughing with him or at him, and he's like, great.
Yeah.
So he'll start doing things to try to create a joke for me.
Oh,
and I'm
wow.
like, what are you doing?
So you're kind of passing on the comedy torch.
Yeah, I'll tell a funny story. I'm working on this bit now. He's trying to make me laugh. He's trying to be funny to mm-hmm. me. And so his mother said to him, he was cold. He was like cold in the house. And his mother said, oh, you need more iron. You know your mama said, oh, you need more iron. You need more iron. So his mind processes, okay, how can I be funny? And I need more iron. I'm going to go lick all the doorknobs in the house. That's what he does. So I catch him with a doorknob in his mouth.
Right.
And I'm like, what are you doing? And he's like, Dad, I need more iron. And I'm like, this is not, what are you doing? No, it's not funny. It was kind of funny.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
I'm trying to figure out an ending to it. But just right. your son licking doorknobs is the weirdest thing. And he thinks he's funny. He's laughing when he's doing it. And I'm like, mm-hmm. you little stinker. So yeah, just stuff like that. Like I
yeah.
see that. I'm like that. You have to tell that story. That's kind. That's
yeah.
funny. You know, I'm looking at the doorknob now. It's one of those long-handled ones. So I'm imagining like that entire the entire thing in his mouth. I don't know. I'm just.
That'd be like a fish hook.
My son fish hooked himself on.
Oh.
The doors in my house. That's kind of funny. Let me write that down. That's kind of funny.
This is happening in real time.
I'll credit Katie later.
It's cool.
So, yeah.
So, okay. Ultimately, what are your goals with comedy?
Goals.
Where do you see yourself ultimately?
Obviously, Netflix specialist. Let's go ahead and throw that out there. I love that.
Okay. Opening up for Dave.
Oh, yeah. Opening for
performing
Dave.
Performing as a double headliner with Dave Chappelle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Double headliner with Chappelle.
Mm-hmm.
I think realistically, unless I put myself in a closer proximity with who books Netflix specials, I'll probably have to release through YouTube
because mm-hmm.
I am down here.
I've seen Kenny DeForest.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so being able to get traction online is really important anyway. So
yeah.
That's probably where I'll have to go anyway. obviously I'd love to write for an SNL or something like that. But we're in the South. You know, we don't really have that hub that we can go to. Mm-hmm. So I'm just taking it one day at a time. Probably the first goal is let me get an hour together. Yeah. I've got about 30 minutes. I have 30 minutes. I have about 45, so I'm working the last 15.
Mm-hmm. And the doorknob is the last.
That's the last of my closer. My son licks doorknobs. Good night, y'all. That's it. No call to action. No send off. Just a door licking, iron deficient 8-year-old. That's probably the goal within the next 2 years is to get a solid hour. Get it filmed, and that's the hard part. It's like, where do you film? You got to pay a venue fee. You got to get an audience. Right, it's like all this stuff. So that's, and then for social media, it's just getting as many followers as I can.
Yeah, You have 19,000 or something.
I got 19,000 now on Instagram.
That's awesome.
And yeah. I've got like 6,000 on TikTok. So I'm not quite where I want to be, but mm-hmm. the work has worked out where it is. I figured out how to create viral moments, which is good.
So, okay, we're going to ask these questions. Do you, Jonathan Silver, have any hidden talents or unique hobbies that you would like to disclose on the air?
I learned how to juggle during the pandemic.
Okay.
So I can juggle.
How many balls did you get up to?
I got to 3.
Nice.
Which is just
That's
juggling.
That's more than me.
Yeah. So
I can't do
any. I learned how to juggle during the pandemic. Hidden I mean, comedy, I guess, was kind of the talent. And now it's not hidden at all. But I can juggle. Yeah,
so,
I can juggle.
So you are a dad, and I have to ask you, you're a dad.
Yep, I got 2 kids.
Okay, so what is your favorite dad joke?
Favorite dad joke?
Corny joke, popsicle stick joke.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I wish you'd known you were going to ask me this. I would have thought about it. Oh, man. I heard one today. I'll tell you what I heard today.
Yeah.
This girl was like, I'll scroll to Instagram, and she was like, bald people, thank you for being here. And thinking, I know how reflective you can be. I thought that was pretty funny. I was like, that's funny. I like it. I'm also bald. So
I was
going
to say,
being
a bald person.
Yeah, I related a little too hard to that one. So there you go, dad joke. That's my favorite dad joke.
Cheers.
The one that I heard today. Cheers to the dad joke.
Well, thank you, Jonathan, for being on the
Thank you for
show
having
today.
Me.
Yeah,
this is
yeah.
so awesome. Arts Underground. Now we have an outro. This is the outro. Do you have an outro already?
I don't have an outro.
No, 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 no. Arts Underground. Arts Underground. Arts Underground. Boom.